2-2 pitch. Called strike three. Biggio doesn't like it. Santana sets down Cavan to end the game. The Yankees win 8-3.
Ran into some tough pitching for sure. Had our chances. Left the bases loaded today. Had a chance to win the series here and didn't. But just up and down, both sides of the ball, whether it was offense or pitching. 10 on the road is tough. Guys are really looking forward to getting home, as am I, and hopefully find some consistency. But I think it was just really up and down.
Show Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, live from Rogers Center as we get set for the Blue Jays home opener. Good morning, Brent.
Good morning to you.
This is a part of Rogers Center that I've never seen before. One, people cleaning the Rogers Center early in the morning. I've never also been in the building at this time of day. Nope. I imagine there are more people here because, we're not the only people working today. Breakfast Television also doing their show from Rogers Center today. But this is, I didn't realize that there are people that work in the building at this time of day.
This is a good thing to remind you of, and Sandman back at the studio, if we could just clip that for next time when either it's before the start of the show or you bring it to the air when you go, what are all these people doing on the road when I'm driving to work? Obviously, I'm the only one who works. Well, look at this. We have people here. I presume at least some of them drove to work here.
Dude,
I think so at this time of day.
There are people cleaning each individual 100-level seat here with a washcloth, which I've never seen before. Is that like an opening day thing, or is that an everyday thing where each individual seat gets its own, NASCAR pit crew?
Well, I think it's like, not to say that the standards of cleaning would slip at all here, but it's like anything. You get something new in your house, and it's like, hey, put a coaster down. Come on, what's wrong with you, you heathen? Put a coaster down. Do you not revere wood? What's wrong with you? Put that down. And then, you got the table for 5 years, and there's a little water ring here or there. I think that's probably like a little bit of what's at play here. But yeah,
here's the thing. They've never been used before. Never will these seats be as clean as they are right now.
Lie. They will be cleaner in mere moments when somebody wipes them down a little bit more. Every second we're here, the seats are getting cleaner, Ben.
Oh, man, it is opening day. Blue Jays and Seattle Mariners tonight. Jose Barrios against Luis Castillo.
Can I ask a verbiage question
of
you? When did the home opener just become opening day again?
It's the same thing.
Okay, but I didn't want to do this because we had, the venerable Dan Schulman on with us last week, and you guys are both like, we got a million opening days this year, and I was wincing every time. It's the home opener.
Sure. Okay. It can be both.
No, it can't. No. Opening day was whenever they opened the day of baseball. It's like, this is the home opener.
Yeah, a week and a half ago. All right, this is the home opener. I don't know. I don't know if you need to be.
It says
so
it right.
Angry.
Look at right there in front of us.
No,
home opener.
It says to the core.
No, look at the big screen.
Oh, yeah,
in the middle.
It does say
home opener. It doesn't say opening day. The sequel. Mm. Opening day part three. No,
the son
home
of opening day.
Opener.
Yeah,
it's like opening day junior.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually opening day the third in that case. Then
I love the home opener or opening day, because everything's brand new. I walked in here, obviously, well before you because I'm more punctual than you.
We will not let that slide. You get to work earlier than I am, but you're not more punctual than me. I pride myself on punctuality.
Oh, no. I actually had my kids chanting about our punctuality. I was like, okay, we're going to leave because my kid had hockey. And I was like, we're leaving at such and such a time. Right. You know why we do that? And he's like, why? He's like, because we're Ennis's and we're always on time.
I love that. That's good.
I'm going to shake your hand.
Good job.
Yeah.
We normally can't do that. There's the desk between us. But saddled up beside each other we're at the saloon.
It's kind of weird, but we kind of have to turn sideways to look at each other. Anyways, what I was going to say when you rudely interrupted me is it's opening day for the ballpark and the new renovations in the 100 level, which people will be blown away by. I already got a chance to see them sneak preview. But it's opening day for the broadcast booth here, too.
Mm.
These headsets, the ones that you're wearing, Stephen Coyle, technical operator, was taking them out of the plastic before you got here.
I wonder how the radio guys feel about that.
We're christening them.
I know. I feel honored, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, man, it's an exciting day.
Opening day is,
Well, that is, too.
Opening day.
No, opening day is also an exciting day when the season starts, but now that they're at their home and the building is opening, it's the home opener.
Yeah,
and I think everyone's excited for it.
For Rogers.
Yeah, opening day the 3rd.
Yeah.
The third.
Now that I know that irks you, that's
I know.
All
I know.
I'm going to say.
That's
today.
Fine. That's
also,
okay.
The on deck.
Just, like most things in life, I would just have a subtle rage gurgling inside of me that will inevitably bubble up in a probably unhealthy manner.
Yeah, I can't wait for you to take a swing at me. Anyways, also, the on deck circles are covered in plastic. Like, those are brand new. I like that. It just feels brand new. I love the brand new, clean look of Rogers Center. Never will Rogers Center be this clean again this season.
That's a good point. I'm trying to look at the thing. It might say opening series, though, on the batting thing. So this might be...
opening day.
No, it's a little tick. It doesn't say opening day anywhere. It says opening series down there. It says home opener on the big Jumbotron, though. So still scoreboard
break. It is both. It's also eclipse day.
Mm.
I don't know. You want to save your eclipse thoughts for later? You know what? Let's save it. Save it for later. Okay, you got big eclipse thoughts?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right.
I mean, yes.
All right. Okay, anyways.
You want to stick around.
Please. So this is like, it's now official. This is a baseball-only ballpark. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much there was still left to do to change it into a baseball-specific ballpark. Mm-hmm. Again, I think I mentioned this on the radio the day after I came here for the sneak preview, that the dugouts were movable and now they're not, and now they actually have power outlets where, you know, when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is looking at his at-bats on the iPad, which I don't know if he's a guy that does that, he can plug it in, he can charge it now. But yeah, last year was the biggest difference, I think, to the fan experience. I'm very excited for how this ballpark is going to look and what the fan experience is going to be like for 81 home dates this season.
Did you get to go in the dugout?
Yeah.
Okay. Does it? Because it looks carpeted from up here.
It's not.
Okay. No, I was going to say that would be asinine.
That's not. You don't like. You know what's tough?
Okay.
Cleaning sunflower seeds out of.
I agree.
Of carpet.
As you look into the visitor's dugout to my right, does that not look like a little gray carpet down there? Like it's not.
It's you know what. It's just wet because someone was just previously cleaning.
Spraying her.
Yeah.
Again. Of course, they were spraying it down. Of course.
Yeah. Anyways, to the team, Blue Jays.
Wow. Did you feel that little turn in the tenor of the conversation?
Yeah. Baseball. So the Blue Jays, 5-5 would have been really good. Here, I'm going to give a grade score for the Blue Jays and their 4-6 start to the season. I think it's a C-. It is a passing grade. It's not a disaster. Okay. Like anything less than 4-6 would have been, you failed.
Yeah.
In your first 10 games of the season, you have failed. 5-5 would have been B+, I think.
Yeah.
Anything over 5-5 is A, and then obviously you can get into the A+ range. C minus.
They go that high. I've never like heard tale.
I mean, God, you have the shortest memory ever then, because they lost the opening series of the season last year.
This was an I'm dumb joke. I didn't know the
that's
scale
a joke?
That high. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I see. Nah, yeah, your grade.
Wake up.
It's 4-6 is fine. How they got there? Less so. Unless. Here, I've got something for you.
Sure.
Offensively, obviously, there were questions about this team coming into the season. And obviously, to start the year, the offense hasn't looked great.
Mm-hmm.
But considering that, it's pretty incredible that they are 4-6. They're one of the worst teams in baseball batting average-wise.
Mm-hmm.
They're one of the worst teams in baseball slugging percentage-wise. And here they are. They took 2-4 in Tampa, and they held their head above water. Sort of, kind of.
Yeah.
Taking a couple of games in Houston, in New York, against two very good teams. And the Astros were obviously desperate for wins after being swept in four games. So how about that? Lipstick on a pig.
No, I think there's some element to that. I mean, the thing that you didn't even mention there, and I know it's because you're mostly talking about offense, but if I also included in there that Kevin Gausman's fastball was going to be down 3 miles per hour on average in one of his starts, you'd say, okay, that definitely goes into the pile. This is not going to be a great start to the season. They have overcome a fair amount of things. I mean, I know you did some digging into it. I did as well. It's like, it's early season returns, but we're starting to see some trends with the BABIP stuff and the runners in scoring position stuff, and also just the amount of pitches they're taking per at-bat. So I think you can squint and see it a little better. See the start of the season a little better than the record is. But I also think, again, 4-6, 10 games on the road, not slouch teams. It'd be different if you had a bunch of also-rans you were starting the season against. And, it's possible we look back at the end of 162 and maybe feel differently about some of these teams. But well, at least with the Astros and the Yankees, I don't think we'll be doing that. So, yeah, I think there's some element of, you know, C minus, C, somewhere in there for what the grade's been for the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, you're coming home with your report card and your parent. You don't get to go to, like, the Mandarin, right?
No.
Like, this is like.
God.
Maybe your parents are like ordering in pizza.
Right.
They're not taking you out somewhere.
And that's more just because.
And you're not grounded.
No, and that's just more because they're lazy than they're proud of you. It's like,
yeah,
I'm here, you have some pizza. Like, and most importantly, leave me alone.
Yeah, and we don't have to make dinner. Yeah. And it's a Friday night.
Might have pizza this week.
Okay, so you mentioned some of the numbers that I put out there on Twitter yesterday. And now they're updated because I only had them up until the last Yankee game of that series, Sunday afternoon. One of the ones that stands out to me is the pitches per plate appearance numbers.
Yeah, I like this. I saw that you dug this up.
Okay, so the Blue Jays now updated. They are third in Major League Baseball, seeing over four pitches per plate appearance. Number one team in baseball, so maybe this is not a great indication. The Angels are number one. And a lot of that is probably Mike Trout. Yankees number two, though. Dodgers number four. Pirates off to an incredible start. They are in the top five as well. Rays, there are some good teams at the top of that leaderboard. Now, it doesn't mean everything.
Nope.
It would also play into the fact that the Blue Jays are one of the best teams as far as walk percentage is concerned this season. It's all well and good to take your walks. It doesn't matter, though, if you're not coming up with a hit with runners in scoring position or a home run. But, yeah, if we're looking at process, and the eye test would not necessarily match this. But, yeah, process, I guess, if that's part of this new approach that they've been preaching, that Don Mattingly has called wavy, which when I first saw that quote, I was like, do you mean that they're waving at pitches?
Yeah.
I was like, that's bad. I don't know if you want to be
better.
Wavy, whiffy. Yeah. I'm glad, like, that's what it sounded like to me. I was like, wave? Oh, whiffy.
Yeah, it's like the Homer Bailey of pitchers for this name, yeah.
Yeah, no, he was like, it's a sine wave where it's like, yeah, sometimes they're really doing the thing.
Okay.
And then sometimes they're really not doing the thing. But yeah, that if that's part of the process, we're seeing more pitches, we're taking our walks, we're getting in hitters' counts, that seems like a good indication.
Yeah, I think that you want guys taking more pitches. And, you know, so often with this, I think the conversation goes to the big boys, as it should. It's like, you know, Kevin Biggio can have the approach he has, and it's gonna impact and affect the Blue Jays one way. But Vlad having that approach, Bo having that approach, and honestly, Springer having that approach is what's going to carry the mail. Because to your point, those are the guys that are going to come through more often than not, or at least the way this team's constructed, need to come through more often than not. With that big knock. I mean, with Vlad, we've talked about it over and over and over again. The only road back to him being the elite MVP candidate hitter is having the you know, pitch selection tool back to close to an 80 like it was on the old 20-80 scale when he was coming up. Like, that is the route for him. He barrels everything still really hard. We talked about the hard hit percentage and the barrel rate all summer long last year, and if he was able to be more selective and still do that much damage, he's doing it on better pitches. It just seems to be obvious that would lead to better results. In terms of what you see from the guys down in the lineup, like, sometimes it'll bite you, right? Like Biggio standing there looking with the bases loaded on, I think it was Saturday. You don't love that. It's like, feel free to get the bat off your shoulder. But you do want to see guys taking more pitches. And I especially think early on in the season, especially while the bats haven't exploded, that's when I think if you are a believer in this approach and you are a believer that it's going to stick, it has to kind of stick through this stretch right here where the offense isn't, you know, jumping off the page, and they're not having the big 8-9 run games like we saw in Tampa.
Yeah, it's one thing to say you're going to do a thing. Mm-hmm. Can you continue to do that thing? Can you continue to have the good process when the results do not follow? Or do you start saying, and that's with this. Why am I listening to this new approach? Like, why don't I go back to the thing that's made me a professional baseball player my entire career? So, again, one of the reasons I understand it's not a great start, and there's reasons to be skeptical of this offense coming around, especially considering it was a major issue last season and there were not a lot of things done in the offseason to address that issue. But if I was looking for positives, and God knows you should be, why not? Why would you be looking for negatives? Negative Nancy? I would say that, okay, yeah, 5-9, hard to imagine that that's going to be one of the best depth lineups in Major League Baseball.
But I think we can all agree that 1 through 4, they're going to be at least above average, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's hitting under 200 outside of Justin Turner. Do we think that Bo Bichette stinks now?
No.
I don't. It's a great way to lose me on Twitter or via text, and I'm thinking of one person that texts me occasionally about every bad thing that he sees in a Major League Baseball game. You lose me entirely when you start criticizing Bo Bichette, because you should have learned by now that it doesn't matter what you see early on in the season. End of the year, his numbers are going to be Bo Bichette-like. He's, at the moment, hitting 194 with a 290 slug. And yes, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is he the 2021 version? Will we ever see that again? Probably not. He's also hitting, though, 189. Is he going to hit 189 for the season? I'm thinking probably not. George Springer, okay, is the back end of that contract not going to look as good as you would have hoped? I think at this point, probably. But yeah, also hitting 184. This team is going nowhere if it doesn't get offense out of the top of its lineup. Those guys can't possibly be as bad as they've started this season.
No, they can't. I mean, I think we all have, you know, I think there's room for enough argument when it comes to Springer and Vlad in terms of what you can expect. But like you said with Bichette, it doesn't matter how he starts a season. It doesn't matter how he starts a count, quite frankly. Like, how many Bo and Two conversations do we have in years that he led the American League in hits? So he is the one guy you most throw away anything you're seeing now. Obviously, there does come a demarcation point in the season where you go, where if the numbers aren't there and they're not tracking towards where you see it, you worry. But
yeah,
we're nowhere close to that with him.
I mean, it's even beyond the All-Star break, because Bo was hitting seventh in July, right? A couple of years ago, and then ended up as one of the best hitters in baseball.
Quick side note, what on earth would have to happen to this Blue Jays lineup for Bo Bichette to hit seventh?
Yeah, hitting behind like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, that would be
tough luck for everyone involved. I got to be honest there. But yeah, I think that Bichette is the one guy you just throw it away. I think with Springer and Vlad, you do look at this stuff, especially if approach is something different, that they're not going to hit sub 200.
But
like
both of those guys, and especially Springer, is taking his walks.
Well, that's the thing. Springer started the season hitting homers, and was it the first two games or for sure a couple in that Tampa series? He was taking walks, and he's only continued that. And again, if you're able to do that well, the offense isn't clicking. And who do you think feels the pressure for the offense to click? You know, no offense to Dalton Varsho. I don't think it's him. I mean, maybe that's a bad example because he wakes up every day thinking about Gabriel Moreno. Probably not, but that's just me. But I think if you're a guy like Vlad or a guy like Springer, you're more want to wear it, because we're going to put it on you if you're not contributing. So I think the fact that they've been able to kind of maintain that approach throughout the, you know, lack of a great start to the season for them is important.
Speaking of Mr. Varsho, so I mentioned that this is the year that I think your patience is, you don't have a ton of it when it comes to this offense and who's performing and who's not and who's in the lineup and who's not. And already we've seen a guy who started the season, couldn't hack the pressure of hitting cleanup for this Blue Jays team. We'll just put him one spot back, fifth. Dalton Varsho hitting fifth.
No.
And in and out of the lineup. But Kevin Biggio was hitting fifth with no Justin Turner yesterday. It'll be interesting to see how they manage this. Like, top four guys, everybody healthy. And I guess there's a question about Bo Bichette, which is weird because he was wearing the elbow pad and he got hit on the elbow, like on the pad. Why even wear the pad then?
I don't know.
Don't wear the pad.
Looks cool.
Or maybe like he'd be out for the year if he wasn't wearing the pad. I don't understand this.
I think it looks cool.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely looks cool. What doesn't look cool on Bo Bichette?
This is true.
I mean, remind me what I was talking about previously, but now that we're on like Bo Bichette looking cool, I don't know if you saw his interview with Caleb Joseph wearing like the Drew House hat.
Oh.
I was investigating how much that was and where to purchase it.
It was, I can just answer the first half of that right now, more than you want to spend on a hat.
It is, but not, it was not as exorbitant as I thought, but the problem is it's not available. Can't get them sold out. Anyways,
Bo Bichette got dinged on the elbow.
Oh, he got dinged on the elbow.
Wondering why he's not in the infirmary.
We'll see if he's playing today. As far as, my overarching point was that we're already seeing lineup decisions that are made based on who's hot and who's not. And as much as John Schneider said, hey, 7 games into the season, we're not messing with the game plan that we had coming into this year. We can't possibly play Davis Schneider today because he hit a home run in the ninth inning off one of the best closers in baseball a season ago, because that's not part of our preseason plan for the early part of the year. They've done that. Like, they've started to Ernie Clement is getting much more playing time than I think we would have envisioned. early days of the season. Part of it, and it's easier to do with Clement because he's a plus defender, too.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, like the fit for Ernie Clement on this team is a lot easier than Davis Schneider, who, I mean, I haven't seen him be an absolute butcher out there. There's like the one play in left field in Houston where he had to manipulate himself around a corner. Yeah. I haven't seen him miss too many plays at second base. He hasn't gotten a big opportunity. But we're already starting to see that. And I wonder, like, the further we go along where the Blue Jays offense hasn't quite found its stride yet, mm-hmm. where we see more and more lineup decisions that lean towards offense as opposed to defense. And the one that I'm thinking of most,
yep.
and it's not going to be as much as people are probably pounding the table for less Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, it's probably not that because mm-hmm. it's early days with him and they have a two-year they have a 2-year investment in him. They also have an investment in Dalton Varsho and less so Kevin Kiermaier on the 1-year deal. But I could see a world where not only is only one of those guys playing against lefties, which mm-hmm. is a guarantee, right? Yep. Like you, one of those guys out of the lineup against lefties every time they face a lefty starter, that you might only get one of those guys every day. Like to me, that's an easy fix.
You're talking Varsho or Kiermaier,
yes,
one of the two.
Yeah. And one of them's playing center field, yep. and the guy that's not playing center field isn't playing left field. He's on the bench, and it's a Davis Schneider or it's somebody who's going to give you offense in left field.
I see you've been reading my pamphlets. It's not exactly the same message, but you're getting to the same point as me. If they need to tease value out of Dalton Varsho, the absolute best way to do it is with Dalton Varsho playing center field. That is the best way you are going to. And it's not to say that you just want to hold up his WAR number at the end of the season and go, look at how close he was to Gabriel Moreno. See, not a bad trade. It's not about that, but you're invested in the player. You need him. It's not just about feeling good, but it's about performing. And honestly, he can make all the great plays in left field that he wants, and he makes them. He's a great plus defender out there. It's not the same as patrolling center field. It's just not. And then in terms of the you know, the way you construct the lineup in that regard, I think the other thing that helps is, you know, as much as people clamor for get the bat in there as opposed to a more defensive-minded guy, look at some of the pitchers you have on this team. It's like with Bassett, he's pitching to contact. You don't want to necessarily always override just for offense when you're putting your lineup together. Like, you do still have to keep some defensive, you know, mindedness at play here. And I think it depends on kind of the pitcher you've got on the mound that day. Like, it's like if you've got a guy in Bassett who's pitching to a ton of contact, it's like maybe I feel a little differently about having a guy who's more of a bat in the infield than, you know, somebody like Kiner-Falefa. But I think that's the thing you might also see as well, where, yes, it's pitching matchup dependent, but it's also matchup dependent on your pitcher and what kind of guy you got going.
Sure. But I think that stuff becomes less relevant the more this offense struggles, right? Like, it's all well and good to be, you know, putting the best defense you can behind Chris Bassett,
yep.
because he puts a lot of balls in play. But what good is it if you're helping Chris Bassett, you mm-hmm. know, get through six, allowing only two runs when you score none?
Yep. No, there's definitely that element. I also just think it's the, you know, Schneider, I think, is a slightly different case, but when it comes to most of these guys, I think we're kind of talking about relatively similar players. It's like Ernie Clement, yeah, he has a slightly different profile in terms of what he can give you offensively, and he has the speed out there, but it's like over the course of a season, it's far from a guarantee that he's going to be infinitely better than a Kiner-Falefa or, you know, a Kevin Biggio. Like, I think that's the other thing we go to with this, is Davis Schneider's a slightly different animal, that there is a reason to believe that he can be, you know, maybe not impact, but a nice bat in the lineup. With those other guys, I think even as much as we like Clement, it's far from a guarantee that he gives you some big upgrade as opposed to something different.
It's fun to see Ernie Clement get his moment,
of course,
of his career over the weekend at Yankee Stadium, putting the Blue Jays in front with a pinch hit home run. He and Davis Schneider already with two. Like, there's been two great moments for the Blue Jays this season. Those guys have been the authors.
They only got two spots left on the Mount Rushmore for this year.
Yeah.
Saving for playoff wins, I guess.
And I guess it is true that at the end of the year we're looking back at those two moments as like two of the best of the season, that's been a rough go of it. And I don't anticipate that being true.
One more today, obviously.
At least. Yeah, I remember last year's opening day at Rogers Center. When we first got our look at the new dimensions, and boy, that was a different look. That was something we'd never seen
jarring
before. Yep. Yeah. Instead of the cookie cutter cutout, we had the little cutout in center field, and of course the new public spaces. But I remember, I think it was the first inning, Kevin Kiermaier jumped up and stole a home run, like immediately in game one yesterday. So we'll see what they got in store for us today. Also, back to yesterday.
Mm.
So you mentioned the pitching. And by and large, it's been good enough. Save for, I guess, the guy that I think you would count on as being the most reliable pitcher all season long, Kevin Gausman, having his dip in velocity that so many people rightly pointed out,
Colt,
had a very similar start a season ago in Kansas City. And he said he was feeling fine. And eventually, like, you did see the velocity come back. He had a couple of 94s in there. Bowden Francis now through two starts. He was on notice going into start number two. I'll tell you, though, Brent, as much as the numbers were awful, and, yeah, he got victimized being too cute in that inning against the Yankees and Giancarlo Stanton waiting for a fastball and then turning on it and untying the game. Doing the thing that Kevin Biggio was unable to do in the top half of that inning. I'm not quite ready to throw Bowden Francis out with the bathwater yet. And part of that is, there's no obvious solution. There's guys that down the line I think will become more and more obvious. But Agueriel Rodriguez, he made one nice start also in the cold in Buffalo against minor leaguers. And Ricky Tiedemann's looked okay. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Alek Manoah, and we can talk about him as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, through two starts, it's not all you want is your fifth starter to keep you in a baseball game, and through two starts, Bowden Francis hasn't really done that.
Nope, he hasn't. And, I know at first blush you go, it's a tough offense, but it doesn't mean you have to give up that. It's with a guy like Bowden Francis, you nailed it. There is a floor that this team is looking for, and it's not an overly high one. But I think part of the problem, and, this isn't why he pitched the way he did yesterday, but I think part of the problem is that look at what the Blue Jays starters have been asked to do this year. Like, you're just asked to walk such a fine line. And, again, he didn't do that because the bats didn't get going or anything along those lines. I don't think he saw Kevin Biggio look at strike three with the bases loaded and go, I'm screwed. We got to give it up. But I look at it as a guy who – I think you see a better version of that if he pitches with some run support behind him where there is that safety net. And to your point about moving on from him, unless you're clamoring for Mitch White, then you're not ready to move on from him because it does feel like it's that or Rodriguez. And Rodriguez, I think, will eventually get up here. I just think they want to bide their time with him a little bit, and one more Bowden Francis start isn't going to kill you.
Yeah.
I think that's the way I look at it.
He struck out five. He only gave up two hits. The walks were an issue, right? He was trying to be too fine in a tough environment when it came to the weather, and he gave up the big hit, the one big swing of the bat to Giancarlo Stanton. Again, and he also took advantage of Angel Hernandez a couple of times, which probably deserves mentioning. It's amazing that in a world where every official gets criticized in every major sport, he's on the short list of officials across all the four major North American pro sports that you can name as being one of the worst.
Yeah, he is.
I think he's the worst. Mm-hmm. Is he not in the gold medal position?
Okay, hold on. Let me just put myself in the right mental state to answer that, and when I'm not seething at Wes McCauley and Eric Furlott on any given basis. But when you just look at the actual body of work, the amount of fan bases that loathe him, the none that love him, and the fact that even non-baseball fans are probably aware. It's like he almost passes the mom test. My mom's like, God, this Angel Hernandez, he is no good.
He is
the worst. You're right. I would love to sit here and have a really hipster answer no, Joey Crawford in the No, he's the worst.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. Speaking of not
Ed
good.
Ed Molloy is my go-to bad NBA ref, though.
Ed Molloy! They didn't have the guts! Anyways, Alek Manoah makes his first official minor league rehab start with single-A Dunedin.
Yeesh.
And not quite as bad as that game in the complex league, but it is a complex set of results here. An inning and two-thirds, seven runs, but only six earned. Five hits, four walks. Four walks, out of the gate. Starts the game with four consecutive walks. Hit a guy, which is... That's right. Gave up a home run, threw 58 pitches, 26 for strikes. I saw some quotes from him where he was like, it felt good. The velocity was there. I got to tell you, you almost make it worse when you're talking about how that wasn't so bad.
Yeah. The fact that that's wholly in line, and I understand it's he doesn't want to turn it into a firestorm. And guess what? With a box score or a stat line like that, it's going to look pretty disastery, and we're going to have this conversation. Man, it is jarring. I know they can't do this because they're playing another org, but I mean, it's low A ball. Could they not have just, when he walked the four guys to start the game, be like, okay, you know what, Alec? Do over. Starting
breakfast
fresh.
Ball.
That, yeah, four of them. Four breakfast at bats for you. I honestly, like, there's no way he was ever going to get it back, it feels like, with the way his confidence probably is spiraling right now. You have a performance like that, it starts that way, and all this does is just kick the can further down the road. It's not like this was imminent, but I do think the earlier in the year, you had the one outing where he goes five innings and he strikes out four without allowing anything, or even, I don't know, without walking and hitting a bunch of guys. The earlier that happens, I think the more it could have accelerated the process to him getting back here. But now the longer this goes on, it feels like you need to see an even bigger body of work before you can trust it.
Which is tough, because him starting officially in a minor league game starts his rehab clock. He only has 30 days before the Blue Jays have to decide. I mean, they can option him, but we know how much he enjoyed that last season.
I don't think it was very much.
No, it wasn't. I mean, maybe this is just a blip. Hard to take it as such, especially, I mean, you combine this with what we saw last year at the major league level, what we saw from him at the minor league level, what we saw in his brief spring training start this season.
What,
if I were him,
see against the 17-year-olds.
Yeah, if I were him, I'd be having heart palpitations that, like, honestly, maybe the best of my major league career is over, and we're getting very close to what I call the Nate Pearson bar, where at a certain point with Nate Pearson, and it was mostly injuries with Pearson, it was just like, oh, out of sight, out of mind. Like, anything you get out of this guy is a bonus, where you're never expecting anything out of him. I think we're getting close to that with Alek Manoah.
Yeah, it is definitely trending in that way, and I mean, it just seems like, yeah, we need to see the positive sign at some point. That's the thing, is you haven't even seen the baby step moment of, well, you know, God, it's like you'd kill for even just like, look, no one was there and it went great. Everybody's feeling good about it. You'd kill for even just that story. But, you know, you hear Manoah saying he felt great during an outing where he, I mean, I'm not going to say how he looked, but where he performed the way he performed, walking a ton of guys. And I understand command has always been a bit of an issue with him. But, yeah, that's super jarring. It's not anywhere close to what you want.
It's not what you want. What you want is to see a baseball game in the city of Toronto in person, which you get to do tonight on opening day.
Home opener.
Opening day, Toronto style.
Looking at it, I would settle for that. If you throw the Toronto style, I'm like, oh, I don't mind that.
Let's Hogtown style.
Yeah.
Eclipse version.
Total eclipse of the heart.
Blue Jays and Mariners. All right, when we come back, though, I'll talk Leafs because, you know, Auston Matthews just keeps scoring. And Mitch Marner returned, and to my surprise, he was not next to Auston Matthews. That and more next as we continue to broadcast live from Rogers Center, the Blue Jays home opener, Jays and Mariners tonight. This is the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, live from Rogers Center, getting set for the Blue Jays home opener, which is also referred to as opening day Toronto style. And it looks like, what are they, only like 35,000 more seats for them to clean, Brent, with the, like, ShamWow.
I don't know where they started, though. Maybe they were finishing.
Oh, maybe this is, yeah, maybe they've been here since, what, like 11 o'clock last night?
Maybe they're, like, upset with themselves. Like, no, Fan Morning Show is here, and there's still a particle of dust on a seat. How can we?
It's like when my wife, you know, we have people over. She's like, oh, it's, house has to be spotless. God forbid people think that we have other things to do than clean our house.
You're like, I know, people are coming over. Don't worry. There's beer in the fridge. Yeah. Like, the things I care about have been taken care of.
Correct. By the way, schedule change on Sportsnet 590 The Fan today. Real Kipper and Bourne will be heard 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Blair and Barker, special edition, 4 p.m.
It throws my nap time, really messing with my Kipper and Bourne listening, but that's okay. You should all listen.
Okay. All right. The Toronto Maple Leafs. That's another sweet transition.
Yeah, buddy, you're on fire. It's your opening day here.
They
opening day, your brain style. How about that?
They win a hockey game.
Oh, don't do this. Don't do this. Can I? Can I?
Okay, go. Oh, this is your, I love a super sexy intro. Let's hear your super sexy. Okay, go ahead. Let's hear your intro.
Don't come here and like, oh, yeah, the Leafs playing down the stretch. I mean, no. Revo beat the wheels off that Pezzetta with his curly clown hair. Matthews Tuck 64. And most importantly, the Montreal Canadiens eat it. And I got to have a good little in-your-face conversation with my neighbor Marcel down the street.
Marcel.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There's never been a more Montreal Canadiens fan than your neighbor Marcel.
Yeah. Oh, it's
I mean, that guy's out of Central Casting.
He really is. He's just like packing a cigar.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, like, obviously. But like cigarette or cigar.
Can I tell you the worst thing he said to me, though? He was like, hey, good luck to you guys in the playoffs, which is in and of itself, that's just like a polite thing to say. But then he's like, oh, you know, what do you guys think? And then he goes, don't worry, though. If you get Boston, I'll be cheering for you. And I was like, don't do that.
Yeah,
don't.
Worse.
I don't want that. I want you to root for a Comet, not one of the teams involved.
Ew. Ew, if we're ever at a spot where, like, the Montreal Canadiens fans feel sympathy,
I'm so sorry for you.
No, that's not what you want.
No,
not
but the problem is I moved in three doors down from a Montreal Canadiens fan.
Yeah, Marcel.
Yes, I'm just trying to get the math right. Very, very close to the Corey Perry knee and the Leafs blowing a 3-1 series lead. So he forever gets scoreboard on me in this one.
Yeah, that's tough. I would probably never leave your house.
Well, he's moving, though, so that's...
Oh, thank goodness.
We're all over. This is news of my street here.
Sorry, Marcel. Safe travels. All right. Maple Leafs dispose of the Habs 4-2 in a forgettable opening 20 minutes. They explode for all the goals.
Yeah.
In the second period, including Austin Matthews' 64th. The story of the game for me is just one game. Like, I know we talked about this on Friday, right? You were like, hey, what are the things that you're still think are up for grabs with the remaining single-digit games?
And you're
games
like, nothing matters.
Yeah, which is true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't watch a hockey game, but it didn't seem like too much mattered. And the Leafs, going into that game, had already clinched because of results on Friday, so they had the X beside their names. And and they're still positioning at play. But the biggest thing for me, and one game does not prove it to be a thing, but I did not anticipate, and I still don't anticipate Mitch Marner being not next to Austin Matthews when they play game one of the postseason. But for one game, at least, and we'll see what happens tonight in a huge game for the Penguins, who for a hot second there yesterday were in a playoff position. The Red Wings won, so they're out on the outside looking in now. But I got to say, my thinking was changed, not just because of the results. I believed that the results, and you don't get to take much away from beating that Montreal Canadiens team.
No,
I'm sorry.
Of course not.
But I will say that where it changes for me is like the conversation around it and people rightly talking about, hey, if we have three lines that are dangerous, that's going to make us more difficult to play against, which is the obvious number one reason why you wouldn't have Mitch Marner next to Austin Matthews. But that everybody seems to be cool with that and almost encouraged by that, including William Nylander, who's now playing with Pontus Holmberg as his center. And that line did score.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, making $11 million a season probably helps. But
I would think.
Yeah, the messaging around it surprised me.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't have been. I was surprised that it wasn't Marner put with Holmberg. I thought it would have been, you put him there, it's just a much less prominent role, you can kind of,
especially game one,
that's what I would have expected. But I have no issue with the way the lines look now. It's the way I like it. I think I'm unlike most people, I would not be surprised to see this for game one of the playoffs. Now, the thing I question is if the first shift even goes bad of that game, does Sheldon Keefe have the willpower within him to not do that? Because Keefe, we know it, he loves his security blanket. All coaches do. Like, we say this, like, oh man, this coach likes these guys who've had a ton of success together to play together. Obviously, there we've had the conversation, there's reasons to spread out the lineup, but it's also not crazy that a guy would want to go to a pair he's had, you know, a ton of success with them together, not the team success. But I think that's the question, is not will it be there for game one, but can he resist temptation if they don't win game one, or if, again, it's a bad start, it's a bad first period, if Matthews looks even a hair flat.
Can Sheldon Keefe resist the urge to juggle his
Sheldon
lines?
Keefe? No.
Like, of course not. And you wouldn't want it. Like, at certain instances, you would want, obviously, Mitch Marner to play next to Austin Matthews. But, yeah, can we see the proof of concept for a team with actual forward depth, try to use that forward depth
and yeah, not make them as easy to play against, where you can just focus all your attention on one line. John Tavares needs all the help he can get right now, you would think.
Yep.
So throwing Mitch Marner next to his side, and we saw that in early days, and it was years ago. But yeah, that was a pretty good pairing, those two. We've seen proof of concept.
Well, and we talk about maximizing in terms of what it means to have a, you know, be it Marner, be it Nylander on that third line, what it does to have one of those guys there. This is head and shoulders the best version of Max Domi we've seen. And it hasn't all been papered
one
right
now. One of the leaders in 5-on-5 assists in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, he's been remarkable during this stretch. But I think that's the other thing you have to think about with this is everyone naturally, I think, does the, if you're going to put Marner there, you put Domi back to the left side, let Marner play the right. But I worry you lose a little bit of what Max Domi has when he's not the kind of primary setup man on a line. I think that's been such a big part of what he's been able to bring. And I think, yes, we talk about wanting the best version of your third line, but I also think you get the best version of Max Domi when he's playing with Matthews. I'm not opposed to trying Max Domi as a center again and seeing if now that he's been reinvigorated you can kind of find something. But if you're not going to do that, then you need him playing up on the right side with Matthews there, because I don't like the idea him, Marner, and or Domi, Marner, and Matthews together. I think if you do put Marner on that line, you got to go back to what you saw at the very beginning of the year with Bertuzzi there.
Yeah, Max Domi is sixth in the National Hockey League in assists at 5-on-5. He's only 20 back of Connor McDavid, which sounds like a lot, but that's like,
yeah, no, that's like so close.
Whoa!
Yeah. Well, the other thing too, and I, you know, this stuff shouldn't matter, but let's just be honest, it does. Is what does Austin Matthews want? He doesn't get to decide, and I think we all assume, well, he wants to play with Mitch Marner, and I think if you point blank asked him, he would say that. I also think just use your eyes. Mm-hmm. He pretty clearly loves playing with Max Domi.
Yeah.
Loves it. They get along well. I think there's some element to the fact that, like, you know, Max is Ty's kid. Like, he's just got that superstar aura about
Austin
him.
Austin Matthews love, like, he, it's weird. He doesn't have the thing, like, the physical thing,
oh,
but he loves those guys that do. Like, nobody got more excited for Ryan Reeves' scrap on Saturday than Austin Matthews, who was, like, losing his mind.
There was that one, but then there was also the Reeves scrap against Janot.
Yeah.
Domi and him look like they're the 13th or the 12th and 13th man on a Raptors bench when somebody gets posterized. Domi's like, oh, like covering him. It was incredible to see the reaction. You just don't see this stuff out of hockey players, and it is, they clearly really like being teammates. And that's not to say that Matthews is gonna throw a stink or throw a fit if he gets the demotion of playing with Mitch Marner. I don't think he'd be upset about that, but I think that there is some element of that. If you can turn Max Domi into, and you know, not to take the credit away from Domi, he's obviously done the work himself, but if Max Domi can be from being one of those like fringy guys to, hey, he's not part of the core, but he's kind of on that level too. Now, no, he does feel like he's kind of part of the core, at least in terms of personality. Like, who knows what happens with the contract and everything. And I think that's important too, to kind of bring more guys kind of into the fold in that way.
So yeah, Austin Matthews scores 64 on Saturday. 6-6 is what he's got to do. But we were saying that when it was 8-8, and all he's done is scored in those two games. And Sheldon Keefe has said explicitly, we heard it from the horse's mouth, our priority is making sure everybody's in the best possible position come the postseason, which is now a certainty, not that it wasn't before, but like there is an X now, factually, next to the Toronto Maple Leafs in the standings. Like, given his druthers, sodium pentothal style, would Sheldon Keefe, okay, like this, you can't ask this question, would Sheldon Keefe like Austin Matthews to score 10 goals tonight? Like,
agreed.
Obviously. Like, that would be the best thing for everybody. If Austin Matthews got 70 out of the way before the final two games.
That's the easy door. That's why we blocked it off.
Yeah. You can't go through that door. Given his druthers, though, would Sheldon Keefe, if it's not going to be that, would he rather just, hey, maybe no more goals? Like 64 with two games to go, which still is like we've seen this guy start the season with two hat tricks. And that's all he needs. All he needs is two hat tricks to end up at 70.
Yeah.
But it's a tougher sell for Matthews to pull him out of the lineup if he's at 68 or 69, obviously the last two games of the season. It's an easier sell if he's only at 64 at that point. Would Sheldon Keefe, if you in his honest moment, you get a couple of You get a couple of beers into him.
Yeah.
Is he telling you, yeah, man, I hope that this is not a decision I have to make. I'll make it, but I hope it's not like that.
So I think Matthews has only gone, I'm trying to think if he's gone even 7 or 8 games without a goal this season. And that's why I think Sheldon Keefe would take the very hard choice. And it's like part of the choice would be, you can't tell Matthews I'm saying this, but he's done. If Sheldon Keefe's choices are, I have to make a hard decision with him at 69 goals with one game to play, or he's going to go on a 6-game goal drought leading into the playoffs, I think it'd be the 6-game goal drought. Because guess what?
Ugh.
He's not going to go 8 or 9 without scoring a goal.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's almost like, okay, guaranteed it's not going to come in round one of the playoffs. I think that would also kind of factor into it, and that's why I think it'd be a like awful thing to say, and nobody wants to see it. But I think if Sheldon Keefe had his druthers, it'd be no goals between now and the playoffs, given him or if the other choice is him sitting on 68 or 69 with 1 or 2 to play.
How about, yeah, again, like a couple of hat tricks, just get this thing out of the way.
Would not complain.
One against the Penguins, who played an electric factory Saturday afternoon game.
Thank you to Sidney Crosby. We talked about it last week of like their Canada's team or the most public team in the NHL. It was proof of concept, and I know it's like, yeah, my world is super, you know, skewed this way. But the amount of text I was fielding about a Saturday hockey game when it was a beautiful outside, it just showed that that guy still has the power to kind of move the needle. And not that the NHL would ever do this, but like if you were going to rig the playoffs, Sidney Crosby needs to be in. He needs to.
He was like for a second again, like after that victory,
fleeting moment,
they were in the postseason. But yeah, they're gonna, you would think, have their best foot forward tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs. We cannot go any further without talking about Brady Tkachuk. The Ottawa Senators. Life, like, you can't script some stuff, right? Like, if you were to write a script, a hockey script, you're like, over the course of a season, the Maple Leaf season, it hinges on one of their best players being suspended for 5 games for cross-checking a guy in the face after he took a slap shot into an empty net. And then, at that point, the Leaf season, it would be nothing but positive, seemingly, throughout the rest of the regular season. And then at some point, after the team that did that, like, continues their march towards nothing, off the end of the earth, that would be done to them in a much less offensive manner.
I argue more, but...
Okay, Nico Hischier, you know, sliding it barely into the empty net after the horn.
After the horn.
I mean, but barely... and then Brady Tkachuk losing his mind as he thought the Ridley Greig thing was so, so funny.
Yeah. I mean, find that as funny.
Yeah. The script writers would be like, can we come up with something a little more realistic? That's a little too on the nose.
I loved it so much. I think the best part about it is that they're not the same incident. If it was Nico Hischier with a clapper on an empty net and it was the exact same instance, then I think we feel differently about this. Because it's the exact same thing, and I think even Tkachuk is like, oh, I thought that was funny. I can't really.
Yeah.
There's just enough difference here. You throw in the after the horn, it's a whole different level of egregiousness.
God forbid, after the horn.
It's all dumb, of course, but it's...
Nico Hischier, like, you know, the world... Everyone knows...
The Swiss, famously love their conflict.
They like to mess it up a little bit.
Let me hold that wallet for you, pal. But, yeah, I look at it as just, it's perfect. I love the way everybody handled this. It's actually, this is the only thing that's similar about the last time. Just good job by everybody involved. Nico Hischier, though, you got to be more of a troll. You got to want to do it. Did he even... I wonder if when he was going down, he's like, I better not slapshot this thing. We know they're sensitive about that, so I'm just going to lay it in there. And he still got screamed at by Tkachuk. I mean, this is like this goes without saying. This is just Brady Tkachuk being mad at the world that Ottawa is what it is right now. And he's not to blame for that. Like, he's far from the problem there, but you're the captain of a team that's never got into the playoffs. You got to wear at least a little bit of that, I think. And you can just see the frustration mounting. It's palpable. And yeah, I love it. It was awesome. It was just the dumb hockey argument. I think back to David Clarkson in the Road to the Winter Classic series, like, I will defend that water bottle from Todd Bertuzzi. It's like, yeah, these guys argue about dumb stuff all the time. I loved it. More of it, please.
Yeah, dumb stuff.
Not too much more, though. It's much like the dust up in New York with the Devils as well. God, Devils involved in all our viral moments lately. Who would have thought? The sexy Devils.
Sexy Devils.
Stupid sexy Flanders.
Yeah. Also, in that game, Brady Tkachuk setting a record with 16 hits.
In the cap era.
Yeah.
Whatever that's worth.
Okay.
Yeah, he's running around like a madman.
That's still pretty good.
Oh, no. Yeah,
oh, you're besmirching. Oh,
no, I'm not. I'm just saying. It's like that's how long I think people hear that and they go, I'm willing to bet some guy in the 70s was. And yeah, he probably was. But
it's also
this
a stat.
Era of hockey, yeah.
Yeah, it's also a stat that's kind of not nebulous.
No, they fixed it, remember?
Sure.
No, I don't believe that either. But
yeah, right.
Yeah, this was the Islanders, the three guys on their fourth line leading the NHL in hits for 7 years straight. Oh, gee, I wonder how that happened.
Yeah.
It's like, don't be wrong, they hit a lot of people.
Yeah.
Just got credit for like three at a time. They're getting like video game multipliers down there.
Yeah, well, I believe in that. All right, when we come back, your friend and mine, Gord Stellick, we'll talk Leafs. We'll also get his reminiscing of opening days previous, because no doubt he's been
You think he's been to an opening day or two in his day?
I may have run into him at a previous opening day or two. All right, that more next as the Fan Morning Show continues live from Rogers Center, opening day Toronto style, Blue Jays and Mariners. It's Ben Ennis, it's Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.